Well, when did the first Muslims arrive in the USA and how well integrated are they today? Beyond Belief follows in a moment. First with News of PM, here's Eddie Mair.
Big changes are coming to child benefit. Carolyn Quinn at the Conservative Conference will have the details. The Scottish socialist politician Tommy Sheridan has gone on trial along with his wife, accused of perjury. We'll hear from the court. Amid a flurry of terror warnings, we'll try to get to the bottom of what they mean. Tim Franks will report from the Ryder Cup. Frank Gardner reports on Somali pirates. And here's an early warning for you if you have a fear of clowns. There's an item in the programme about clowns. And if you have a fear of trails ending, you really should brace yourself.
Cheers, Eddie. Now it's time for the last in the current series of Beyond Belief. Here's Ernie Ray.
Hello. The proposal to build an Islamic centre in New York, just two blocks away from Ground Zero, is proving hugely controversial. The argument rumbles on and on. Those opposed claim it would be insensitive to the families of the victims of 9/11. Those in favour point out that they're exercising constitutional rights which are afforded to all religious groups in the United States. Much of the rhetoric has been whipped up for political reasons. It is, of course, the build-up to the midterm elections in November, when the Democrats could lose control of both houses of Congress. President Obama has been sucked into the controversy. Hardly surprising, since according to a recent poll, nearly a quarter of Americans think he is a Muslim. Before all this furore, it had been thought that American Muslims were reasonably well integrated into mainstream society. Now that's being challenged and questioned. Joining me to discuss Islam in the United States are Robert Salam, a former US Marine who converted to Islam and is now the editor of The American Muslim, Dr. Hussein Rashid, lecturer at Hofstra University in New York and associate editor of Religion Dispatches, and Daniel Pipes, director of the Middle East Forum in Philadelphia. Robert, you're part of the indigenous American Muslim community, an African American. Have you noticed a change in public attitudes in recent weeks?
Yes, actually, the African American Muslim community recently have decided to throw their hat into the debates concerning this community center, primarily because we get excluded from the discussion a lot. People tend to focus on the narrative about Muslim immigrants, but they tend to stray away from those of us who have been here and can trace our origins and lineage back to when slavery first began. The attitude has been, you know, this seems too familiar to other controversies within the larger African-American community, such as the civil rights era.
Now, Hussein, your parents, I understand, emigrated to the States from Tanzania. Does your experience of being a Muslim in America differ from Robert's?
I couldn't speak to Robert's experience, but I think I am part of that indigenous Muslim community. I was born and raised in New York. And I think that Robert is absolutely right, that the African-American voice of Muslims has been excluded both by Muslim immigrants and by non-Muslims as well. But I think at least in New York, we have generationally been trying to bridge that gap. And I think that this controversy has really allowed us to come together much more strongly as a community. And I find many more similarities across ethnic lines with my own age group than I do within my own ethnic group across age lines.
Now, Daniel, you've been studying Islam, I understand, since the 1960s. What changes have you observed in recent weeks and months?
I think the furor over the community center in Lower Manhattan has unleashed a latent response to 9/11, an anger about radical Islam that we just didn't see until now. I don't know where it's going to go, but it does look like a turning point.
Do you think that's healthy?
Well, I think in part it's healthy, in part it's not. I think it's healthy to be angry at radical Islam, which I see as a third totalitarian movement after fascism and communism. I think it's not healthy insofar as it tends to go over and turn against Islam itself, which I regret.
I want to park the controversy about the Islamic Center for a moment or two and concentrate on the history of Muslims in America, because Robert, you mentioned that Muslims came here first with slavery.
Yes. We can trace records of those initial slaves that were brought over from West Africa. Many of them were Muslim. While there are no exact figures or percentages, there are records that can trace those individuals who maintained their Muslim identity throughout the early arrival here in America.
Hussein?
We also have very strong suggestive evidence that there were also Muslims on Columbus's ships when they came over. But the other thing that is, I think, interesting from the slave period is that because so many Muslim slaves were literate, we are, in fact, recovering autobiographies written by these Muslim slaves describing their life and what it was like. One of the more interesting ones, I think, was of a Civil War soldier by the name of Nicholas Said, who talks about being a Union soldier and being a Muslim. Because of slavery, the freedom to practice religion was curtailed, and in fact, forced conversions were quite rampant. And then in the 1920s and 30s, I think you start seeing a revival of a type of cultural memory in the African-American community. And so you see groups who are starting to emerge throughout the country. You've got the Moorish Science Temple, and of course the well-known Nation of Islam, drawing both on America's fascination with the East during this time period, as well as, I would argue, a type of cultural memory that's been transmitted subconsciously across the generations.
Just explain the Nation of Islam to me. What is the Nation of Islam?
In the earlier part of the 20th century, the Nation of Islam was arguably very much a black nationalist movement that drew heavily on symbols from the Muslim world. They had a declaration of faith that said there is no God but God and Muhammad is the messenger of God. And it becomes difficult because some of the writings are unclear whether when it talks about Muhammad as being the messenger of God, if they are in fact talking about Elijah Muhammad, the founder of the Nation of Islam, with W.D. Fard, who might conceivably be the god in that construction. But really, if you look at perhaps two of the best-known figures out of that movement, Malcolm X and Muhammad Ali, I think you get a good sense of the nationalist element present in that movement as well during the time. And I don't think we can divorce it from American racism of that period either.
Robert, do you consider the Nation of Islam part of mainstream Islam? Do you recognize them as Muslims?
That's a very loaded question, actually. My particular opinion is that anyone who claims to be Muslim and says the Islamic Declaration of Faith are Muslim. Now, what I can say from my personal experiences and having known people in the Nation of Islam, when it comes to their actual theology, those lines become very blurred, and which makes them very a controversial group even within the Muslim community. We would also be doing a disservice to the full breadth of the history if we didn't mention the Ahmadiyya Muslim community. Some may not even consider them Muslim, but I think that's a different debate in of itself. But they sent missionaries in the early 1900s, many to African-American communities, to spread Islam. And a lot of the early blacks in America who converted to Islam also were largely a part of the Ahmadiyya Muslim community's missionary efforts.
Now, Daniel, Malcolm X and Elijah Muhammad have been mentioned, two highly controversial figures who belong to the Nation of Islam. How much do you think their narrative, their story, has affected the image of Muslims in America in the eyes of the rest of the population?
I do think that most Americans look at Muslims in the United States in terms of immigrants more than African Americans. African Americans are somewhat to the side. Getting back to your question about Elijah Muhammad and Malcolm X, they were deeply radical, rejected the United States as a whole, rejected Christianity, rejected so much of what is American. But over time, there has been a moving towards the mainstream, and the more radical elements that they represented, many of them have been left by the wayside, and one sees this tradition fitting more into the mainstream American life.
Malcolm X fell out with the Nation of Islam. He became a Sunni.
His experience replicated that of many other members of Nation of Islam, including the sons of Elijah Muhammad, who began as believers in this folk religion and then became aware of normative Islam, either by, for example, going to study in Cairo or going on the pilgrimage to Mecca and realizing what they had believed in was really something quite superficial and folklorish. And they moved towards normative Islam. We're at a position today where the overwhelming majority of American blacks are within the context of normative Islam, not Nation of Islam.
Now, the 1960s, Hussein, saw a great increase in immigrants from the Muslim world. Where did they come from and why?
Post-1965, we had an opening of our immigration laws. Professional classes were allowed to come in. And a lot of Muslims came in for education, to work in so-called professional fields. And a large number of Muslims who came during that time period were of South Asian descent, that is, from modern-day Pakistan, India, and Bangladesh. They represent about a third of Muslims in this country right now, and of course African-Americans represent another third.
And they had a very different experience from the UK because they tended to be better educated, better off, and they integrated more easily into American society.
I think that definitely the professional background, the educational background, allowed a certain amount of ease and movement within American culture. I think also sociologically, American culture is slightly different from the English in terms of class movement. One thing that gets overlooked is that in 1986 to 1988, there was also another wave of immigration reform laws that allowed Muslims to come in who weren't as well educated, who weren't part of that professional class. And so now when you look at that sort of immigrant wave, while it did start out very strongly professional and very well educated, and therefore pushing the community as a whole into upper income brackets, I think now you see Muslims matching representation in broader American society in terms of income, education levels, locations in various neighborhoods, from the extremely urban to the extremely suburban.
Robert.
A lot of the immigrants came seeking better lives, but not necessarily to integrate or unify Islam in America. We do have these cultural hovels, you'll see, where people tend to just stick with their own. You may go to one mosque to another mosque, and the ethnic breakdown is all South Asian or all Somali or majority Arab, and even in some communities you may have majority African American mosque. So it's very divided.
Daniel, America has a wonderful track record of welcoming immigrants and making them part of an integrated society. I'm wondering what this new wave of Muslim immigration did to American society.
Well, I think the historic ability of the United States to absorb foreigners and turn them into Americans, or at least their children to Americans, has significantly weakened that sense of confidence that Americans had until, say, the 1970s is now shot. Also, when you add to that the communications and transportation, it's possible to live in the United States but mentally be connected to another country, have passports from one or more other countries, be fluent in other languages, spend time there. So I think that immigration in the United States has fundamentally changed from what it had been historically, and is less distinct from, say, what you have in the UK than what it used to be.
Hussein?
I think if you look at the discourse around Muslims in this country now, it very much mirrors the anti-Catholic sentiment of the early part of the 20th century, of course, the anti-Jewish sentiment. And Robert mentioned even the Ahmadi Muslims who were coming into this country. And originally they were kept out on anti-Mormon laws. And so I think you see a cycle in American religious history where I don't think we can deny that we sometimes don't live up to our better selves. And I don't think it necessarily speaks to a lack of confidence. I think it happens to be just part of a real serious national now interaction of trying to understand what immigration means. And I think it really has more to do with the diversity and the number of immigrants who are coming in rather than any one particular immigrant group.
Daniel?
I resist the comparison of radical Islam to Christianity, Judaism, or other religions. I see it in the context of fascism and communism. This is a brutal totalitarian movement with radical utopian aims that doesn't compare to anything in any other religion. As an author put it recently, what the Nazis are to Christianity, so is Islamism to Islam. It's a quite different phenomenon. The conversation we're having in the last few months concerns radical Islam at base, concerns the attack on the United States 9 years ago, concerns the attempts to bring the Sharia here. These are the issues rather than the traditional issues of religion and immigration.
Well, let me remind you that you're listening to Beyond Belief, and today we're discussing Islam in America. The proposal to build an Islamic centre two blocks from the site of Ground Zero has revealed cracks in American society. Those who support it claim that it's their right under the First Amendment, which promises freedom of religion. Those opposed say that it is grossly insensitive, given that the perpetrators crashed the planes into the Twin Towers with the name of Allah on their lips. So what does this divide say about the position of Muslims in today's America? And with me are Hussein Rashid, whose parents came to the States from Tanzania, Robert Salam, an African-American Muslim, and Daniel Pipes, who's against what he calls the politicised ideology of Islamism. One of the leading voices opposing the building of the Islamic Centre belongs to Pamela Geller. She's the founder and editor of AtlasShrugs.com, a website which claims to bring you news that you will not hear from the mainstream media. She was sitting on Long Island on the 11th of September, 2001.
It was shocking. One couldn't really comprehend what was happening. But clearly, when the second plane went into the building, we knew that this was not accidental. The country was under attack.
Now, before 9/11, what did the words Islam or Islamist mean to you?
It didn't mean anything to me. There was nothing to mean. It was a religion.
But after 9/11, you were determined to find out more about it.
After 9/11, I felt guilty that I didn't know who had attacked my country. So I did spend the following years studying on Islam or Islamic Jihad. And I found increasingly that the media, in sort of a self-imposed Sharia, was either by omission or by whitewash, not informing the people of the threat that the West faced.
So you thought there was an actual campaign to keep this information from the people?
Well, I don't think it was a conspiracy as much as under the guise of, let's say, not being offensive. I've not, previous to that, seen the media care about being offensive. It was always about freedom of speech. But it became clear in 2005 when the Danish cartoons, there was no media outlet that would run the cartoons. And I found that shocking. I consider it a self-imposed Sharia, because in the Sharia, you cannot insult Islam. You cannot defame Islam.
The editors who I know who decided not to publish the cartoons would say they did so because of public safety. They felt it was in the public interest not to publish.
I couldn't disagree with you more, because by appeasing violent jihadists, you keep moving the line in the sand. So every single time something will upset them, then we are just going to capitulate. We're just going to appease. I don't believe that's any way to fight a war. It's surrender in installments.
What is your attitude to the building of the Islamic Center two blocks from the site of 9/11?
It's not two blocks from the site. It is ground zero. That building was partially destroyed in the attacks of 9/11. The landing gear crashed into the roof. And to erect a 15-story mega mosque and Islamic center in a building that was destroyed in 9/11 is deeply offensive and insulting and deliberately provocative. Why there?
Well, the Constitution gives freedom of expression to religions, so haven't Muslims a right to build anywhere in Manhattan?
Clearly, we have hundreds of mosques in New York City. We have thousands across America. It's not an issue of religious liberty. No one has suggested abridging or invoking the First Amendment. It's an issue of common decency and human compassion. We're constantly being schooled in this hypersensitivity in the Muslim world. You can run the Danish cartoons. You can't say the word Muhammad on Comedy Central or run Muhammad in a Huggy Bear costume because it's deeply offensive. And yet, there's no reciprocity. You know, where is the mutual respect? Where is the mutual and mutual understanding? Over 70% of Americans are opposed to this mosque. It's deeply offensive. It's painful. Many moderate Muslims of conscience, feel that a mosque on ground zero is deeply offensive and wrong.
What do you say to those who say that you are an anti-Islamic bigot?
I'd say that it's not true, and it's part of the Islamic supremacist narrative to shut people up. It's patently unso. I believe in individual rights. I believe in liberty and freedom of speech and freedom of religion for all. And the Sharia and Islamic supremacism and imperialism is an anathema to that very idea. And so I'm going to fight.
That was Pamela Geller, and she wondered, who are these people who are attacking my country? Was that a fairly common reaction, Daniel?
I've been impressed over the last decade how much Americans have learned. There are all sorts of terms I couldn't use, terms like Sharia and jihad a decade ago, which I can now use and assume that everyone understands. So the level of understanding and interest in Islam is certainly much greater than it was.
And Pamela decided, Hussein, that she was going to find out about Islam, and there's a sense in which that's totally admirable.
Yes, I think so. And I think I agree with Daniel. I think in the last 9 years or so, there really has been a push for the average person to go and learn a little bit about Islam. But I think often terms like Sharia and jihad get bandied about in a way that no Muslim would understand the way they're being discussed.
Robert.
The real question and the real debate surrounds what type of information are they getting. You know, what I've noticed is that a lot of people go to certain websites that speak to their view, not necessarily the orthodox or the Islamic scholarly route. They go to sites just basically set up to defame Islam or give misinformation. So while I appreciate that people get the narrative, I would always say, go and actually talk to Muslims.
Let's turn to the community center two blocks from Ground Zero. Is it a mosque or a community center, Hussein?
We are hearing conflicting stories as to what this is. But consistently, The language that's being used is that this is a community center, modeled on the Jewish community center on the Upper West Side of Manhattan.
Isn't that confusion, though, a bit worrying? You'd have thought by this time we'd be absolutely clear about what this building is for.
It's worrying insofar as you're asking New York City to get behind you on a project. Right now, if they can't get their act together to give us clear answers, then I'm really not that concerned about them being able to organize any other big project.
I think it's fairly clear that the organizers were not prepared for the kind of attention they got, that they are amateurish, they have differences between themselves, so they weren't ready for prime time, as we put it, and they got caught up in this maelstrom.
Does this part of New York need another mosque, Robert?
The Muslim population, as we know, is very significant in New York City. There are at least two mosques between 4 and 16 blocks, I believe, from Ground Zero. And they're already overcrowded. They're in the basement. I grew up as a Christian, and in many of the churches I attended, we could never fill the pews in the way that you can at a Friday at your local mosque. Even here in the D.C. area, we have to have 2 and 3 prayer services on Friday because you literally have thousands of people every Friday consistently.
The question then is the sensitivity one, because no one queries the First Amendment prohibits any law respecting the establishment of religion and anything impeding the free exercise of religion. But it's a sensitivity issue. We all know that the Pope stopped the building of a Carmelite church near to Auschwitz. Is it not a case that there could be a similar gesture here on behalf of the Muslim community?
We've got to understand there are 9/11 families backing this project and have been from its inception. And I think that there is a debate going on in 9/11 families that I am loath to make public. This is something that is very painful, clearly, something that needs to be talked about amongst those families who are opposed to it and who are supporting it. I think we've also got to recognize that there were Muslims who died in the towers on that day. And I think that when we talk about sensitivity, how sensitive is it that you're protesting the center and people brought DUD missiles onto the streets of New York aimed at a place they consider Ground Zero? It's not terribly sensitive. Do you want to know how painful that was to New York to say that here you are saying you want to be sensitive to our needs and you've brought missiles to point at Ground Zero? It's insulting, it's demeaning, and it is absolutely insensitive, not only to the people who lost loved ones on 9/11, but people who are still dealing with that tragedy, because we are New Yorkers.
Daniel.
To me, the location of it is not terribly important. To me, the important thing is who is behind it, what is the money behind it, what is the purpose of it. Is this an Islamist center or is it an Islamic center? And I look at the personnel and I look at their associations, and so I'm against it. But that has little to do with location, a lot to do with ideology.
When we talk about sensibilities, I think it's unfair because we have 9/11 families on both sides of this issue, and we're politicizing the sensibilities of one side or the other based on where we stand in the argument, and that's insensitive. When you associate all Muslims directly or indirectly with the terrorist attack and the ideology of the terrorists by saying that our mere presence there is somehow insensitive to those who disagree with Muslims, that's insensitive. So I think we get into dangerous waters and territory when we start talking about sensibilities. We're better off sticking to the facts and letting New Yorkers decide one way or the other what they want to do with this issue.
What has been the impact of this whole community center business on Muslims in America? Because we know that there have been a rise in attacks on Muslims. There's a New York taxi driver who was knifed a few weeks ago. There have been incidents in California and in Tennessee. What does it feel like? Is it radically different, Hussein?
Well, I think we are seeing an increase in anti-Muslim rhetoric in this country. One of the things I've been most proud of being in New York is that we rebounded very quickly after 9/11. I tell people that the safest place I felt being openly Muslim was in New York right after 9/11, because we weren't concerned about that sort of labeling religions. We were like, are you a New Yorker? Can you help? And if the answer was yes, we needed to move beyond our grief together. What hasn't happened, at least in New York, that healing from 9/11, I don't think was ever fully brought through. We were so caught up in rebuilding. We were so caught up in trying to go back to being New York again that we never fully healed. And I think some of that rawness is what we're seeing now.
Daniel, do you think that this is a moment like occurred in France when they banned the wearing of the burqa in public? Do you think that this furore over the community center is changing the culture of conversation in America?
I do think so. I think that Islam is now a foremost topic of conversation, much as it is in France and the rest of Europe. It's now becoming that in the United States.
Do you think that Pamela Geller's blog, for instance, helps or hinders the process?
I think that it's not so much about Pamela Geller. I think that this is a broader issue of saying, like all American citizens, we have rights, but we also have responsibilities. And we need to take ownership of those responsibilities. And so for me, if I'm serious about the First Amendment, whether it's a question of for Park 51 to be built or the right for people to say inflammatory things in public, then I think I have to be for the freedom of speech for people who criticize Islam. In fact, I think Terry Jones, the Florida pastor who was trying to burn Qurans on September 11th, had every right. I may find it distasteful, but he has every right to do it. And I very much follow Voltaire in that regard, that I may disagree with what you have to say, but I will fight with my life for your right to say it.
I would agree with Hussein. I think our cultural experience also shapes our religious views sometimes, whether we want to admit it or not. And American Muslims, we tend to be just like other Americans. We believe in democracy. We believe in freedom. So our religious viewpoints will also be reflected in that. I've been called non-Muslim by Muslims overseas because of my particular views. I'm very pro-military and Muslims serving in the military. I'm very pro-freedom of speech. But these are my views as an American, whether I was Muslim or not.
Daniel?
Radical Islam is the problem and moderate Islam is the solution. And part of the problem is the United States government and other governments, other public institutions, further and support the Islamists, the radicals. It's the moderate voices that get ignored. I think it's crucial that the moderate voices be given a chance to speak publicly, given support, given acknowledgement, given applause, so that this constructive reading of Islam will, in the end, replace the radical vision that is now so great a problem for the world as a whole.
One final question to all of you before we draw this program to a close. Do you think the Islamic Center near to Ground Zero will be built? And what impact will that have on Muslims in America, Robert?
When all the sudden is done and the political season is over, I think the issue will go to the back burner as far as Americans are concerned. And it may very well be built. And I don't think it'll have any real impact. I don't think anyone's going to really give it a second look 5-10 years from now. I think this is just one of those times where some of the issues that we weren't discussing, this issue was the catalyst to bring this dialogue to the surface. I think Americans will go back to being Americans and won't care one way or the other about this center.
Daniel?
I'm skeptical it'll be built because it's so ambitious and I don't see where the money's going to come from. I don't see that the planners really have got a way to successfully pull it off. But if it is built, I think it will be a continuing source of irritation. So I would think that for Muslims, they would hope it not be built because it would be a sore thumb.
Hussein?
I too have some doubts as to whether it will be built, partly because I don't think that the organizers have done a very good job getting community support. I do hope it does get built. I think the Lower Manhattan community really does need a community center. If it does get built, when it does get built, that it will be controversial, but in the sense of the pool water is too hot or too cold. And, you know, we're New Yorkers. We'll complain about anything.
Well, there we must leave it. My thanks to Daniel Pipes, Robert Salam, and Hussein Rashid. And that brings to an end this series of Beyond Belief. I'll be back again around the middle of December, when I hope you'll join me.
Beyond Belief was presented by Ernie Ray. The series researcher was Charlotte Vivian, and the broadcast assistant, Rosemary Grundy. And Beyond Belief is available as a podcast and can be downloaded from the Radio 4 website.